lot of our listeners, Robert, would like to earn a lot more money. They probably, you know, there's probably just a few of them who are in the who have the issue of having too much at this point. You've said, I think, several times that you don't have to be earning a lot of money in order to become rich.
Right.
So can you expand on that just a little bit so some of our listeners can basically, you know, look at how they can, with what limited resources they have now, what are some specific steps that they can do? What can they actually do?
Well, number one is they got to have a plan. You have to have a plan. I mean, I think the biggest mistake that people make is, well, should I invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or real estate? Those are products. The first thing you have to do is find out, I'm at point A today, and in 10 years I want to be at point B. There's no difference in going from Vancouver to New York. You say, well, this is where I am today, this is where I am. Now, how do I want to get there? And so the person then needs to lay out a plan. You know, financial planners do that. It's not rocket science. You say, this is where I am financially today, and this is where I am tomorrow.
Would you recommend people going to financial planners?
Yeah, but please, that's a good question. But the point is here, there's financial planners for the poor, middle class, and for the rich.
Right.
And so a person, what I say to people is this, you need to make a decision. One of the biggest mistakes that people make is they plan to be poor, and they get it from their mother and father. My poor dad always said to me, he says, when I retire, my income will go down. And I hear that today, even as, like I said, the words become flesh. People say, well, when I retire, my income will go down. So they're already planning to have a problem. The problem is going to be they're not going to have enough money. So they're already preparing themselves for that problem. So the point is, you got to prepare yourself. Well, my problem is by the time I'm in 5 years or 10 years, my problem is I'm going to have too much money. Then you got to change your plan again. So most financial planners are poor. That's the biggest problem I have with them. So if you want to be rich, you got to find a financial planner who's rich. The problem with most people in the financial industry is they're not investors or business owners, they're salespeople. And there's nothing right or wrong with it, because some of my best friends are salespeople. But the point is, as an individual, there's a part of you that needs to do your homework to say, this is what I personally want for my life. Isn't that what you're doing hard with them? You're saying, you got to figure out what you want, what they want for their individual lives, right?
Totally. I think the thing at this point in time is more of the how-to. You know,
no, but Harv, but this is what I'm trying to get into. I can't tell them how to do it because I'm not the same as they are. In other words, the way I do it personally, this is what most people don't understand, is how I do it, I'm different than they are. And the way I've done it, the market has different since the way I've done it. And the market has changed today. So it goes back down to, I think what you've been trying to tell them, is that it comes down to fundamental mind skills, mindset, mind skills, and emotional skills.
We've been working on that for at least the entire year so far, and most of our courses are involved in that.
Yeah, and the thing that my rich dad taught me was that money is just an idea. And that's why I'm staying in that point of view, is that if you don't change your thinking, you don't change your vocabulary, you don't change your words, you're not going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You probably wind up where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And until a person's willing to change their point of view, there's another thing, you know the 80-20 rule?
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, the 80-20 rule was discovered about 1896, and it was by an Italian economist out of Italy. It's a very accurate rule. In other words, that 20%, you wear 20% of your clothes 80% of the time. You'll eat 20% of the same food 80% of the time. 80-20 rule is a very accurate rule. But when it comes to money, it's a 90-10 rule. And what 90-10 means is that when you look at anybody who's successful financially, they're in the upper 10%. What that means is 10% of the people will always make 90% of the money. So on the golf tour, 10% of the golfers make 90% of the money. In the financial world, 10% of the investors make 90% of the money. In the movie star industry, 10% of the actors make 90% of the money. So the odds are stacked against an individual unless they're willing to say, I'm willing to be in the upper 10%. And when I talk to people about that, if you don't want to play the game that hard, then it's a hard game. And ever since I've been a kid, so the thing I say to people is you have to want to be the top 10% in a very small niche. For, you know, I have a friend of mine in Phoenix here. He is the top 10% in 15 square blocks. In other words, he controls, he is the top 10%. He owns most of the real estate in only 15 square blocks of real estate. He is not the biggest guy in the world, but he's the biggest. He's the top 10% in 15 blocks.
So we talk about that in our programs as being a big fish in a small pond.
Well, and then he can expand upon that. The thing I say to most people is most people have very big dreams, but they don't think small. So you have to think big, but the way you're going to get there is thinking very small. The devil's in the details. For instance, the guy who created Starbucks, he became a billionaire off a cup of coffee. That's thinking small.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, you know, Harv, you know, the seminars I used to do, I said, well, what do you want? Well, I'm going to open my mind to the open and infinite wealth of the abundance of the universe. Well, that's thinking big, which is dreaming big. But the question is how specifically. So the way you and I are doing it is we're entrepreneurs in education. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And we stay right in there. You don't find me doing too much outside of that. So that we're big dreamers, but we're also small thinkers. In other words, we find very narrow niches. So what Starbucks did was they took on Folgers, Hills Brothers, and whoever else, and they became the very best in perception in the coffee world. McDonald's did it by being a very average hamburger, but they provided the best service in a cheap world. So the thing I always say to people, there's not a right or a wrong. There's always a big and a small, and you have to take both of them. You say, I want to be the biggest in the small market. And that's what it takes. Most people are dreamers, and they never go beyond dreams. Something wrong with having big dreams, but then it takes dedication. In other words, are you willing to dedicate 5, 10, 15 years of your life to the project? So that after dedication, what makes you into the 10% is drive. And we've watched, you know, football, Canadian Football League, American Football League, and all this. The hardest yardage is the last 5 yards. And what determines the winning team and the losing team is whether or not they can put the ball over at the last 5 yards. And so what I say to people, it takes a big dream, it takes dedication, but it takes that drive, it takes that willingness to win. And, you know, you've known me for years, is I've been the guy on the outside saying, don't go to school, don't listen to those guys if you want to be rich. You want to be average, go to school. But if you want to be rich, you got to stay outside of school. That's what Ted Turner did. He dropped out of school. Bill Gates dropped out of school. Michael Dell dropped out of school. Edison dropped out of school. Ford dropped out of school. If you don't have that kind of drive and dedication and a big dream, then the chances of you being rich are pretty slim. Nothing right or wrong with it. But then say, I don't really want to be rich that badly. It's all inside of you.
Let's suppose that someone's mindset is of course, they're consistently working on it, but, you know, they're working in the right direction. Assuming that part is moving towards being handled or being handled, when you take a look at it, what are some of the things, like, I think you've really, you know, brought home the point that you have to be financially literate, and you don't learn this in school. And so most people, they are not financially literate. They don't really understand investments. They don't even understand the smallest kind of investment, something, as you say, become really good at, whether it's, you know, small cap stocks or, you know, blue chippers or certain types of real estate or whatever it is, that small niche that they can become good at.
Become the best at.
Yeah, become the best at. So how would you recommend that people go about learning about financial literacy?
Well,
lots of books out there and stuff, like, you don't know who to turn to, you don't know who's selling what, there's newsletters up the yin yang. You know, how does someone say, okay, I am going to learn how to be wealthy, I'm going to learn what the rich people know?
Well, first of all, you don't have to be rich. I mean, you don't need financial literacy to become rich. But if you want to be a business owner and you want to become an investor, you do need to be financially literate. In other words, Michael Jordan is probably not financially literate, and Tom Cruise is probably not financially literate, but they're in the upper 1%. There's a catch. So if you want to be in business and investing, then you do need to be financially literate. I'll be very clear on that. So if you're saying, I want to be rich as a businessman or woman, or want to be rich as an investor, then you need to be financially literate. That's the catch-all. If you think you can beat Tiger Woods at the game of golf, you don't need to be financially literate. So that's the point of here. The problem with financial literacy is this: it cannot be taught. Just like nobody can teach you to drive a car. So the difference is between teaching and learning. A person has got to want to learn to drive a car. A person's got to want to learn to play golf. A person's got to want to learn to fly an airplane. So if a person doesn't have that innate drive to learn that, and that's why when you say how do you do it, one of the things you got to find out is what do you like learning? What are you willing to dedicate and be have the drive to be the best at? Do you want to be the best at real estate, mutual funds, bonds, commercial real estate, residential real estate, apartment house real estate, land, small cap, big cap? Which one do you have the native desire to learn? Because nobody can teach you that.
Is there any of these at this point in time that you think they're more timely than others?
What's that now?
Are there any of these type of investments or arenas that you're feeling at this point in time are more timely than others?
Well, right now is the age of the entrepreneur. If you're not an entrepreneur now, the chances of you getting rich are fairly slim. That's why we have, today you can become a billionaire in 18 months. And never in the internet today is providing a stable system that has never made it easier in the history of the world for an individual to become a billionaire. It is the easiest time in history. So if you're looking for job security, or you want to be those are in my second book, Cash Flow Quadrant, self-employed, the more you work, the less money you're going to make. That's there's a diminishing return, or there's a cap. For instance, if I'm a dentist, there's only so much money I can make by working hard. And then it diminishes. The thing I say to people, I think what you're teaching people, is the thing about business and investing is the less you're involved in it, the more money you're going to make. In other words, the less I'm involved with my book, the more money I make in it.
So you're talking about leverage there.
Yeah, it's called systemic leverage or financial leverage.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble with most people is for the employee, they want job security, and they want to be a good, hard-working individual. There's a diminishing return in there, ultimately. For the self-employed person, like a doctor, accountant, or a consultant, or a teacher, or a trainer, there's only so many hours in the day. So the people who are employees or self-employed, their vocabulary sounds like time is money. And as long as you have that paradigm that time is money, there's a diminishing return. It doesn't mean that you can't make it. Like Tom Cruise is self-employed, but he's on the top 10%. If you want to be a business owner or an investor, which is the cash flow quadrant, which is on the right side, the B and the I side of the quadrant, at that point, the less involved you are, the more money you're going to make. So there's a really big shift in there, but it's a shift in perspective. It's a shift in core values. It's a core.
So this is, again, what you're talking about with regard to the difference between, let's say, your profession and your business.
That's correct. My profession, ironically as it is I'm a writer right now.
Mm-hmm.
And my English teachers, I flunked out of English when I was 15 and 18 because I can't write. But I hire writers. So the point here is this, is that, you know, the reason I don't like to say how is that how is up to you. What is the best way that makes the most sense? Where do you think you have the best chance of making it? For instance, for myself right now, I have probably no chance of making it on the professional golfers tour because, in my opinion of myself, is I'm a lousy golfer. I don't have a prayer there. But until I change that perspective or that opinion of myself, nothing's going to change. Bless you. If I thought I could beat Tiger Woods, I'd be out there right now, but I don't think I can, so I don't try that. If I thought I could beat Michael Jordan, I'd be on the court shooting baskets. But my self-limiting thought is, I don't think I can beat him. So the way I think I can win the most is, ironically, through writing and doing it through business. That's where I think I have the best chance. So all the listeners out there, please don't follow in my footsteps, but I highly encourage you to say, what is the best chance that I personally have of making it? Which is the best way for me to make it? Look at Martha Stewart. I mean, I don't know what she made it on, but she made it on something. I mean, Colonel Sanders made it on greasy fried chicken. And Ray Kroc of McDonald's made it on a cheap hamburger. All of us can make a better hamburger than McDonald's. All of us can. But Ray Kroc created a better system and a better business plan, and that's why he became so wealthy.
Well, he had a unique ability to be a systemizer. And I guess in retrospect, what you're kind of saying is to really focus on your unique abilities, your unique talents, and put those into action and go, as you said, be small, be the king of a small mountain.
Niche, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the problem with school is that they teach you to be, they really don't teach you to think big and small. What I'm trying to say is you need to dream big and think small.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, you see, like for me, what I'm teaching is my book is now translated into Japanese, Chinese, Spanish, Polish, Czechoslovakian, and all that. So as I sleep, I'm making a lot of money. But I thought really small, I dream big. Most people either think small and dream small, or think big and think big. I mean, dream big is, you have to have balance out there.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't have that drive. Most people are dreamers without the dedication and definitely don't have the drive. Like I said, if you want to be rich, you have to be in the top 10%. So if I thought I could beat Tiger Woods in the top 10%, God bless, I'd be out there today.
So that's a good question for people to ask themselves. What could I possibly be in the top 10% with?
That's my opinion. That's what I would suggest. And then dream big, but think small.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's probably a question people don't ask themselves either. It's, you know, what is it that I could do that I could develop to be in the top 10% in, you know, in the entire niche or
yeah,
the entire world in?
And the reason I talked about the 15 blocks is my friend is the king of 15 blocks. Guy's a multimillionaire within 15 blocks. It's not rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
But he dominates all the little cheap slum housing in 15 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. In your book, you also talked about investing through, like owning a corporation and investing. I'm not sure if you've mentioned investing through a corporation or so that you're using before tax dollars, or how did that all work, and can you expand on that just a little bit?
Well, the second book is called The Cash Flow Quadrant, the difference between an employee, self-employed, a small business owner, a big business owner, and an investor, the ESBNI it's called. But ever since 1215, which is the signing of the Magna Carta, when I think it was King John at Runnymede, the barons, the rich barons, said to them, he says, King, you no longer have the right to make the rules. Well, ever since 1215, and Canada and America, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, we operate upon English common law. Ever since 1215, the rich have made the rules. Unfortunately, when you go to school, you're taught to operate via the rules of the poor, school teachers. And the worst position to be in if you want to be rich is an employee's position, number one, because you're taxed the highest. So when I say to people, if you want to be successful, you must take into account not only accounting law or tax law, but also corporate law. And so what I have is not that being a business owner or an employee or self-employed. The problem with being only an employee is you have less flexibility. As a business owner or a B quadrant owner, is I have multiple flexibility. In other words, I can take advantage of the laws upon when they mean the most to me. So when I buy real estate, the corporate law works in my favor. It works so much in my favor because I can buy real estate with pre-tax dollars. An employee cannot buy real estate with pre-tax dollars. In America, your Canadian law is different than our law. In America, in 1986, they changed the tax law. So the tax Reform Act of 1986 passed by this guy named, he's running for president now, Bill Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
He passed this law that said that if you're a doctor, accountant, and attorney, you could no longer use the tax loopholes the rich did. So all the doctors, attorneys, accountants, engineers, architects got the short end of the stick, which caused the stock market crash in October of 87, which caused the real estate crash that ensued in a big depression or recession in America from 1989 to 1995.